I'm Tracy from Stuff You Missed in History Class. Are you a small business owner or even someone who dreams of entrepreneurship? Then check out season 2 of Mind the Business, small business success stories from iHeart Podcasts and Intuit QuickBooks. Join hosts Austin Hankwitz and Janice Torres as they interview entrepreneurs sharing insights around starting and nurturing a small business. You won't want to miss these inspiring stories of entrepreneurship and discovering ways to business differently so you can too.
Planning your next trip? Choice Hotels' family of 22 brands has over 7,400 locations and the perfect hotel for any traveler you want to be. Like a Cambria Hotel, serving up locally inspired craft cocktails for all my folks who maybe want to meet up and talk about Mad Royals. Check into a Radisson Hotel with flexible workspaces for you strivers who listen during business travel. Or a Comfort Hotel with free hot breakfast, family-friendly pools, and big spacious rooms for the parents who listen with their kids and need a little retreat. What are you waiting for? Join Choice Privileges and start earning points toward your next stay. Find a stay for any you when you book direct at choicehotels.com, where travels come true. When you think about the future, what kind of technology do you envision? Whatever the future holds, artificial intelligence will undoubtedly be at the heart of it all. Join Graham Class as he hosts season 2 of Technically Speaking, an Intel podcast, and hear from the minds transforming healthcare, retail, entertainment, personal computing, and more with the help of AI. Tune in every other Tuesday and explore the latest technology that's changing our world today and creating a more accessible tomorrow. Listen to Technically Speaking, an Intel podcast on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
What's up, this your boy Lil Duval, and check out my podcast, Conversations with Unc, on the Black Effect Podcast Network. Each and every Tuesday, Conversations with Unc podcast feature casuals and in-depth talk about ebbs and flows of life and the pursuit of happiness. Unlike my work on stage, I tap into a more serious and sensitive side to give life advice and simply offer words of encouragement, yet remind folks to never forget to laugh. Every Tuesday, listen to Conversations with Unc, hosted by Lil Duval on the Black Effect Podcast Network, iHeartRadio app, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Presented by AT&T. Connecting changes everything.
Welcome to Stuff You Missed in History Class from HowStuffWorks.com.
Hello and welcome to the podcast. I'm Tracy V. Wilson.
And I'm Holly Fry.
And today we're going to talk about one of those subjects that has been requested by so many people. We cannot name them all.
A bazillion times.
Lots of times, and that is Boudica. Boudica was a first century queen of the Iceni, which is a tribe that lived in what's now East Anglia. She either staged a successful rebellion against the Romans or a massacre, depending on who's doing the talking. And now she's become one of the most famous figures from that era of British history. And it's not just because of this David and Goliath-esque nature of the whole story. There were definitely other tribal leaders elsewhere in Britain whose fight against the Romans was a lot more sustained and really more effective when you look at the long-term consequences. But Boudica really gets top billing because she was a woman, which, in the eyes of the Romans, really made her something to talk about. A lot of the surviving accounts of Boudica were written by Roman historians after the fact. One was Tacitus, who was writing within 60 years of her death, and the other was Cassius Dio, who wrote about 100 years after the fact. The Britons themselves did not leave a lot of written records, so pretty much all of our written accounts of her are colored with the Roman idea, number one, that women weren't fit to govern, and number two, that the Britons were an unorganized horde of filthy barbarians. But thanks to archaeological discoveries within the last century, now we have a lot more complete picture of her and of what happened than we ever did before.
So for background, Boudica is from the Celtic word Buddha, which means victory. And we're not sure if that's a name or a title, but it's definitely not Boadicea, which you might have learned in school if you were going at the times that Tracy and I were.
Yeah, there was an error in a recopying of a historical text long time ago that transformed.
It repopulated itself through many, many texts.
Yes. So definitely Boadicea, if you've heard it said that way or written that way, that's not the way. Here's a description of her by Dio. In stature, she was very tall. In appearance, most terrifying. In the glance of her eye, most fierce. And her voice was harsh. A great mass of the tawniest hair fell to her hips. Around her neck was a large golden necklace, and she wore a tunic of diverse colors, over which a thick mantle was fastened with a brooch. This was her invariable attire.
And this description is pretty much in line with how she's often depicted. A powerful, screaming warrior woman with long red hair who is really bent on taking you down and ready to do it. We don't, however, actually know what color her hair really was. The red could have been an embellishment tied to all of those prejudices about red-haired people, and those have been around since antiquity. And we don't have a ton of evidence to suggest that she was particularly tall. That's a description that went along with a lot of Britons, even though the skeletons that exist suggest otherwise. But it may just be part of the myth of her being this fierce, incredible creature.
So Boudica was queen of the Iceni. And as we said before, this was a tribe that lived in what's now East Anglia. She was born to a royal family around the year 25. And she married a man named Prostatagus. He was definitely from the Iceni tribe, and it's not totally clear whether she was as well or whether she became part of the tribe through her marriage to him. They had two daughters and no sons.
The Iceni were subsistence farmers, potters and metalworkers, and they also raised horses. They probably lived in roundhouses with thatched roofs without a lot of fortification. They were also one of the tribes that offered to join an alliance with Caesar during his unsuccessful attempts to invade Britannia in 55 and 54 BCE.
After Caesar left Britannia, there wasn't really a lot of Roman, or really any at all, Roman activity for almost 100 years. But then Rome invaded Britain again in the year 43 under Emperor Claudius. Unlike Caesar, Claudius's army successfully fought off the guerrilla resistance of the tribes in the area, and they built fortresses and stationed troops there. The Roman presence grew through much of eastern Britannia after Claudius's invasion.
The tribes were actually divided over whether they were in favor of the Romans' presence or against it. There wasn't really one collective, unified people known as, quote, the Britons. They were scattered tribes with their own leadership, and they had their own series of struggles amongst themselves. The Catu Velauni, for example, were Iceni's neighbors to the south, and they had an ongoing guerrilla campaign against the Romans' expansion.
The Iceni, though, made an alliance with the Romans. But 4 years later, the new Roman governor, Ostorius, who did not really trust the Britons, passed a law that made it illegal for the tribes to have weapons other than ones that they needed for hunting. This did not go over well, and the Iceni staged a rebellion.
Ostorius put down the rebellion and removed their leader Antidios from power and made Boudica's husband, Prostatagus, a client king. And as a client king, he got to keep control of his tribe, and the tribe got to keep some level of autonomy in managing its own affairs, but they had to stay loyal to Rome and pay taxes.
In this arrangement, the Iceni got protection both from Rome and from the other tribes as part of the deal. But it came with a cost. The taxation was pretty huge. As time went on, the tax costs to the Iceni got higher and higher. The Romans would also collect part of the harvest and store it elsewhere, and then sell it back to the Iceni, who had to both pay for the goods and for their transport back to them. So tensions started to grow a bit as things got financially harder and harder.
Yeah, not such a good deal after all.
Well, maybe. You're not having to fight off your neighbors constantly.
That's true. Emperor Claudius, of course, was poisoned in the year 54, and Nero rose to power. Nero ordered a temple to Claudius to be built in Camulodunum, which was the Roman capital in Britain. There, the British chiefs would be required to worship once a year, and they had to pay for the temple as well. This, as you can imagine, was not a popular move.
Prostatagus's client-king relationship with Rome made things tricky after he died in the year 60. He was considered to be a Roman citizen, and he had taken the step of selecting heirs for his kingdom, which was a pretty Roman idea. He bequeathed half of his kingdom to Nero and the rest to his wife and daughters. This was a completely unprecedented arrangement, both in British custom and in Roman law. Among the Britons, women had a higher social standing than they did in Rome. It really wasn't unheard of for women to inherit property or to be next in a line of succession. But because of his client king status, the Iceni kingdom really belonged to Rome and not to Prostatagus. In Rome's eyes, this land and kingdom that he had bequeathed was not actually his to give away. It would really belong to Rome until Rome selected a new client king to take his place.
So, because they held this belief, Rome took possession of his entire kingdom. A Roman official arrived and took inventory of Boudica's estate because it was now considered Roman property.
After her husband's death, the Romans also shamed Boudica and her family. The exact method kind of varies in the telling. Tacitus writes that Boudica was flogged and her daughters were raped. But Dio writes that it was about money. Roman leaders had loaned her husband money, whether he really wanted to borrow money or not, and then showed up at her home demanding that she immediately repay it with interest.
At about this time, the Roman governor, Gaius Suetonius Paulinus, was away in Mona, which is now considered Anglesey, which is a Druid island off the coast of Wales. His goal was to eliminate the Druid religion, and this was accomplished, or pursued, among other ways, by cutting down the Druid grove, slaughtering Druids, and placing a garrison on the island.
The Iceni and other tribes heard about this and were outraged. And Boudica was, thanks to the Romans' treatment of her husband's estate and of her family, pretty much primed to fight back against them. So, really, considering all the other stuff that had gone before, the Romans' actions at Mona were the last straw for both Boudica and the Iceni. So, she amassed an army, which reportedly started with about 20,000 Britons. Those 20,000 included children and elderly people. It was basically all people. Come on, let's fight the Romans.
I'm Tracy V. Wilson from Stuff You Missed in History Class. Did you know small businesses make up 99.9% of all businesses in the United States? The world is powered by entrepreneurs, and if you're a small business owner or even someone dreaming of starting your own business, then you'll want to check out Season 2 of Mind the Business, small business success stories from Ruby Studio, from iHeartMedia, and Intuit QuickBooks. And every episode, hosts Austin Hankwitz and Janice Torres talk to entrepreneurs about how they've grown from the lessons of launching and nurturing a small business, and how they have found success being their own boss. From the excitement of first starting out to finding the right tools and resources to process invoices and payments like QuickBooks Money, you won't want to miss these inspiring stories of entrepreneurship and discovering ways to business differently so you can too. And if you're a small business owner or even someone dreaming of starting your own business, then you'll want to check out Season 2 of Mind the Business, small business success stories from Ruby Studio, from iHeartMedia, and Intuit QuickBooks.
When you think about the future, what kind of technology do you envision? Whatever the future holds, artificial intelligence will undoubtedly be at the heart of it all. Join Graham Class as he hosts Season 2 of Technically Speaking, an Intel podcast from Ruby Studio in partnership with Intel. Explore the future of technology that's rapidly evolving our world today with the help of AI. There is still so much work and research needed to fully understand the power and potential of AI, and Intel is at the forefront of implementing AI in revolutionary technology that's changing the world we live in for the better. In each episode, Graham interviews the minds transforming medicine and healthcare, retail, entertainment, personal computing, and more, while pioneering new uses for AI in these spaces. Tune in every other Tuesday and explore the latest technology that's changing our world today and creating a more accessible tomorrow. Listen to Technically Speaking, an Intel podcast on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Me. Focus Features presents Back to Black.
I want people to hear my voice and just forget their troubles.
Experience the music and her story.
Know this, I ain't no Spice Girl.
Like never before.
That's my daughter, that's my Amy.
On the big screen.
I want to be remembered for just being me.
Amy Winehouse, Back to Black, directed by Sam Taylor Johnson. Rated R, under 17, not a minute without parent. Only in theaters May 17th.
Today I'm going to give you some straightforward advice on how to deal with naughty kids. How about instead of timeouts, time ins? Time for you to start paying some bills. I'm J.B. Smoove, and that was a full episode of my new podcast, Straightforward. Inspired by guaranteed straightforward pricing from AT&T Fiber. Get what you want without the complicated. AT&T Fiber, live like a gigillionaire. Available wherever you get your podcast. Limited availability in select areas. Visit AT&T.com/hypergig for details.
Boudica and her army laid waste to the Roman capital of Britain, Camulodunum, which is now Colchester, and destroyed parts of Londinium, which is now London, and Verulamium, which is now St. Albans.
They started in Camulodunum, which was an existing town that had become heavily Romanized. It had gone from being a collection of thatched-roofed cottages to having a marketplace, a 3,000-seat theater, and the temple to Claudius that we mentioned earlier, which was in the process of being built.
Both Tacitus and Dio write about strange happenings leading up to Boudica's attack on Camulodunum, including a statue falling over and women making frantic prophecies of impending doom. It's possible that this was a deliberate effort on the part of Boudica's army to sow fear and superstition in advance of their attack.
Although it had been built up really significantly under Roman influence, Camulodunum didn't really have any defenses. The town sent to Londinium for assistance. Londinium only sent 200 men as reinforcements, either because they didn't take this army of Britons seriously or because they didn't really have men to spare.
Boudica's army went house to house for about 2 days, smashing, looting, and killing. Survivors took refuge in the temple in progress, which the forces surrounded and demolished, and killed everyone inside.
In the end, Camulodunum was entirely destroyed. Boudica's forces burned it to the ground, and the fire was so hot that some of the clay walls in the archaeological record look like they've been fired in a kiln like pottery. I mean, there are pottery shards as well, but these clay walls had also been fired by the heat.
It became pottery. According to written accounts, the death toll there was approximately 10,000 people. But the archaeological record is less clear on this account. There is plenty of charred earth, and there are, as we mentioned, shards of pottery. But there really aren't that many bones, suggesting that many actually managed to flee before Boudica's army got there.
Quintus Petilius Cerealis Caesius Rufus, who was the commander of the 9th Legion, heard about what was going on and headed for Camulodunum with 2,000 legionaries and 500 cavalry. Boudica, whose army just kept growing and gaining new members as she moved across the countryside, ambushed the infantry and wiped them out. The cavalry survived and retreated.
Then Governor Suetonius heard of the rebellion and came back from Mona. He rode ahead of his men and got to Londinium before Boudica's army did. He decided that it would be impossible to defend, especially since Boudica was going to get there before the rest of his men could. The city was unwalled and had few defensive vantage points, so he ordered for the city to be completely evacuated.
When Boudica arrived, she and her force slaughtered everyone who remained. Some of the writings about this particular slaughter are really gory, and they involve sexual mutilation of the bodies. But, like we saw in Camulodunum, we don't have a lot of bodies or bones in the archaeological evidence here, just a really thick layer of char.
The layer in the archaeological record is full of burned daub from buildings and remnants of molten glass. It's not as citywide as the Camulodunum burn, and there aren't many objects other than building debris. So people probably picked up as much as they could carry when they evacuated, or they somehow survived and returned and cleaned up.
Boudica and her army then turned northwest to Verulamium, which, hearing of their approach, did a pretty smart job of emptying. The evacuation was pretty thorough, so by the time Boudica's force got there to sack and burn, most of it was abandoned. So they sacked it and burned it, but didn't do a lot of murdering that time around.
There aren't lots of stories of gore.
No, that was a lot more just burning things down.
And meanwhile, Suetonius gathered an army of about 10,000 men, including some of the force he had used at Mona and some reinforcements from other outposts. It's not entirely clear where they fought or how big Boudica's army was at this point, but according to Dio, she had more than 200,000 fighters, including the elderly people and children still. But modern historians agree that that number is probably pretty inflated. In all likelihood, her force did outnumber the Romans considerably, but they also weren't a trained army, so what they had in numbers, they probably lacked in skill.
So exactly where this last battle took place is the subject of a lot of debate. It's one of those things where they compare the written descriptions to the landscape and where they would have been moving. The Romans chose a spot to fight that gave them huge advantages. The Britons were going to have to move through a large field where they would be completely exposed, and then into a gorge where they'd basically hit a bottleneck. But so far, while trying to match this description to the local area, they have not found a definite X marks the spot kind of certainty.
Like the descriptions don't match up with the topography of anywhere yet?
Yeah, gotcha. there are several contenders, and none of them is in the definite forefront.
Allegedly, though, Boudica arrived at the battlefield with her daughters in a chariot, and Roman's wives came out to watch the fighting. Tacitus and Dio both record speeches she allegedly delivered, and those speeches don't particularly agree with each other, and they're pretty heavily Roman in their sensibility.
Yeah, there is a lot of, I'm just a woman, and I know that you're not used to fighting for a woman, but I'm a woman, and you're going to fight for me, and it...
Which might not have really been her mindset.
Right. If you read these, and you can find them easily online, if you read them, it does definitely sound like someone describing something for readers of their own culture.
Right.
About a different culture that is not theirs. So probably she did say something, but not the things that are written down. This battle went overwhelmingly in the Romans' favor. According to Tacitus, the Romans killed about 80,000 Britons while suffering only 400 or so casualties. Then when the Britons tried to retreat, they found their way blocked by the chariots that had brought out the Romans' wives, which drove up the death toll.
Boudica herself escaped, but she died shortly thereafter, and her cause of death remains unclear. It may have been suicide by poison, which is how Tacitus tells the story, or it may also have been shock from an injury in the battle. Dio says that she actually fell ill.
Many, but not most, of the Roman deaths during Boudica's uprising were civilians. According to Tacitus, 70,000 civilians died.
The small remaining community of Iceni were absorbed under Roman control, and Rome set about rebuilding and also quelling any further unrest. The rebuilt Camulodunum was much more defensible, as were the new Roman settlements elsewhere. Londinium was rebuilt as well, and eventually, of course, became a much bigger and more important city, as we know it today. Verulamium was much slower to rebuild, but once rebuilding started, it was definitely in the Roman fashion and not in the style of the Britons. And Rome gradually moved into more and more of Britain and continued to do so right up until the time when the empire fell.
This is one of those cases where they learned from the experience of having been essentially routed by an army of various assorted people from around the countryside, and then the rebuilding took many steps to make sure that things would be better.
But that did better not defended. Happen again.
Yes, in the future. So yes, that is the story of Boudica. I actually did find one book that had some discussion in it about whether she was a real person at all, or whether this is sort of a story that conveniently has a person that we don't really know existed. And the general consensus was, yeah, we think she's a real person. Don't know if her name was really Boudica or not. So it's sort of a title, maybe.
Right.
Sort of like calling someone Victoria, who was not actually named Victoria.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, that not a lot of definite...
It's nebulous still.
Yeah, it's nebulous. Some of the particulars of this are very nebulous. Like, did lots of people survive, or were they maybe buried elsewhere? Did people come back and get all their stuff, or had they taken it all away before the looting and sacking happened?
So the records we have still leave a lot of questions unanswered.
Yes, and considering how long ago this happened, that is not super surprising.
No.
And considering how there was not a lot of written record from the Britons,
mm-hmm.
Pretty much the people who were literate in that culture at the time were the Druids, and that was not really focused on, like, keeping daily history of what was going on. We definitely have a way more one-sided account.
I'm Tracy V. Wilson from Stuff You Missed in History Class. Did you know small businesses make up 99.9% of all businesses in the United States? The world is powered by entrepreneurs, and if you're a small business owner or even someone dreaming of starting your own business, then you'll want to check out Season 2 of Mind the Business, small business success stories from Ruby Studio, from iHeartMedia, and Intuit QuickBooks. And every episode, hosts Austin Hankwitz and Janice Torres talk to entrepreneurs about how they've grown from the the lessons of launching and nurturing a small business, and how they have found success being their own boss. From the excitement of first starting out to finding the right tools and resources to process invoices and payments like QuickBooks Money, you won't want to miss these inspiring stories of entrepreneurship and discovering ways to business differently so you can too. And if you're a small business owner or even someone dreaming of starting your own business, then you'll want to check out season 2 of Mind the Business, Small Business Success Stories from Ruby Studio, from iHeartMedia, and Intuit QuickBooks.
When you think about the future, what kind of technology do you envision? Whatever the future holds, artificial intelligence will undoubtedly be at the heart of it all. Join Graham Class as he hosts season 2 of Technically Speaking, an Intel podcast from Ruby Studio in partnership with Intel. Explore the future of technology that's rapidly evolving our world today with the help of AI. There is still so much work and research needed to fully understand the power and potential of AI, and Intel is at the forefront of implementing AI in revolutionary technology that's changing the world we live in for the better. In each episode, Graham interviews the minds transforming medicine and healthcare, retail, entertainment, personal computing, and more, while pioneering new uses for AI in these spaces. Tune in every other Tuesday and explore the latest technology that's changing our world today and creating a more accessible tomorrow. Listen to Technically Speaking, an Intel podcast on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Me. Focus Features presents Back to Black.
I want people to hear my voice and just forget their troubles.
Experience the music and her story.
Know this, I ain't no Spice Girl.
Like never before.
That's my daughter, that's my Amy.
On the big screen.
I want to be remembered for just being me.
Amy Winehouse, Back to Black, directed by Sam Taylor Johnson. Rated R, under 17, not a minute without parent. Only in theaters May 17th.
Today I'm going to give you some straightforward advice on how to deal with naughty kids. How about instead of timeouts, time ins? Time for you to start paying some bills. I'm J.B. Smoove, and that was a full episode of my new podcast, Straightforward. Inspired by guaranteed straightforward pricing from AT&T Fiber. Get what you want without the complicated. AT&T Fiber, live like a gigillionaire. Available wherever you get your podcast. Limited availability in select areas. Visit AT&T.com/hypergig for details.
Do you also have a spot of listener mail for us?
I do, and I have two different pieces of listener mail.
Spots, plural.
Yes. They are both about our episodes on the Irish potato famine, and they have some similar themes. I want to read both of them. The first came to our inbox from Shannon. Shannon says, thank you so much for your podcasts on the Irish potato famine. It was one of the few times I've heard the story in such depth outside of Erin. A few things I'd like to share with you. One, in Dublin, you can hear stories of how women would fake being prostitutes to be arrested and sent to jail to get food. There is a prison that's now a museum, and the tour guide I had was of the opinion that it was an economic genocide, since there was double the amount of food being grown in Ireland that was needed to feed everyone, but it was still being taxed out of the country. Two, my great-grandmother was a child of Irish immigrants who went to Liverpool. My grandmother would always say, and she says this in Irish, and I'm afraid I would mangle it. She had a phrase she would say when she ran errands, which means off to sell a chair, which was how they would pay for food. By the way, they came over due to the rebellion, would love this as a podcast. Many Irish names were Americanized. That's point three. My great-grandfather, when arriving in Boston, changed his last name from O'Leary to Leary, thinking it would help him get a job. When it didn't, he just never changed it back. And my grandfather didn't know that his last name wasn't Leary until he was drafted into the army. And number four, the workhouses continued. Many became, quote, Magdalene laundries and are a massive black mark on the Irish government for not stopping them after becoming independent. Also, a great podcast topic. So that was from Shannon. Our other note is from also someone named Shannon, but it's from Facebook. This Shannon says, just finished listening to your Irish famine episode. I'm an American expat now living in Dublin, Ireland. With a master's degree in Irish history, I'm very familiar with the famine. I want to congratulate on a very good podcast about a very complicated issue. One interesting story concerning the famine. In the latter years of the famine, the jails throughout Ireland were extremely overcrowded.
There were two very good reasons for this. First, a vagrancy law was passed so people who begged could be put in jail. Second, people were so desperate for food that they would purposefully commit crimes to be put in jail because once there they would get two meals a day. For example, Kilmainham Jail in Dublin had over 9,000 prisoners during 1850 in a jail that had less than 200 cells. Yeah. Disease was rampant in the jail, but it was better than being on the outside. Thanks again for the podcast. I hope to hear more about Irish history in the future. So thank you, Shannon and Shannon. We really did not get into, that's what, it was one of those stories that just kept getting more and more awful.
Well, and there are a lot of layers to it.
Many, many awful layers. And one of the layers that we did not get into was the layer of people deliberately committing crimes just in order to get a meal, or pretending to commit crimes in order to get a meal. There was a lot of people went to great lengths just to try to get food because there was not really another option for getting food.
Desperate times, desperate measures.
Extremely so. If you would like to write to us about this or any other episode, you can at historypodcast@discovery.com. We're also on Facebook at facebook.com/historyclassstuff and on Twitter at MissedInHistory. You can find our Tumblr at missedinhistory.tumblr.com, and we are on Pinterest. For a little more about what we've talked about today, you can go to our website and search for the word Nero, and you will find the article, Did Nero Really Fiddle While Rome Burned? You can learn all of that and a whole lot more at our website, which is howstuffworks.com.
For more on this and thousands of other topics, visit howstuffworks.com.
Netflix streams TV shows and movies directly to your home, saving you time, money, and hassle. As a Netflix member, you can instantly watch TV episodes and movies streaming directly to your PC, Mac, or right to your TV with your Xbox 360, PS3, or Nintendo Wii console, plus Apple devices, Kindle, and Nook. Get a free 30-day trial membership. Go to www.netflix.com and sign up now.
Xumo Play is your destination for endless entertainment. With a diverse lineup of 350-plus live channels, movies, and full TV series, you'll easily find something to watch right away. And the best part? It's all free. Love music? Get lost in the 90s with iHeart 90s, dance away with hip-hop beats, and more on the iHeart Radio music channels. No logins, no signups, no accounts, no hassle. So what are you waiting for? Start streaming at play.xumo.com or download from the app and Google Play stores today. All you can stream with Xumo Play.
This is Malcolm Gladwell from Revisionist History. eBay Motors is here for the ride. With some elbow grease, fresh installs, and a whole lot of love, you transformed 100,000 miles and a body full of rust into a drive that's all your own. Brake kits, LED headlights, whatever you need, eBay Motors has it. And with eBay Guaranteed Fit, it's guaranteed to fit your ride the first time, every time, or your money back. Plus, at these prices, you're burning rubber, not cash. Keep your ride or die alive at ebaymotors.com. Eligible items only. Exclusions apply.
Hey, guys. Back at the playground again, huh?
Yep. You know what this playground could use? A wine country.
Heck yeah. And some waves. So we could go surfing.
Oh, yeah. Ah, love that.
A redwood forest would be cool.
I'm in.
Ah, ski slopes.
Let's do it.
Can a girl go shopping?
Yeah, baby.
Wait. Did we just invent California?
Discover why California is the ultimate playground at visitcalifornia.com.
Asking the right questions can greatly impact your future, especially when it comes to your finances. So if you're looking for a financial advisor you can trust, certified financial planner professionals are committed to acting in your best interest. That's why it's got to be a CFP. Find your CFP professional at letsmakeaplan.org.